A podcast of the cinema.
I almost didn't spin the microphone around in time to get to my mouth to say the name.
But you did.
Of the show, but I did.
That's what matters. You're Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duralde. We host this program.
We used to do a whole lot more.
Yes.
But now.
I host some other programs as well.
This is what happens now.
But here we are. Happy quarantine anniversary.
I just posted a photograph of the anniversary cake that I made for our 1 month inside anniversary.
Yes.
I got sick on March 6th, not with that thing, but with
sinus infection.
A nasty sinus infection, yeah. And then by the time I got over it and was still coughing it all up, this all went down and I was like, oops, I better stay home now because I sound like a person who has that thing.
Yeah.
So I was already home, and then you got a cold, and you were home too, and then suddenly the March Madness began, and,
yeah.
And now we've 1 month.
Yeah.
I'd like for you to reflect on our 1 month inside right now, please. How do you feel about me, our marriage, this everything? What's going on? I do not want to reflect on this.
Our marriage is great. You're awesome.
Thank you.
But I don't want to think about the rest of this.
I mean, dang, I made you this cake.
Yeah, you did.
For our anniversary. Delicious. I didn't make for the... I just made the cake.
Yes, like, and then it turned out. The timed out.
Saturday night, I got in my chair, my nice comfy reading chair in the bedroom. And I had like 3 cookbooks ready to just, you know...
As you do on a Saturday
night. Pass the time. And so with all respect to Mindy Kaling and all the other people who complain about this on Twitter for the sake of a joke, when I read a cooking blog or a baking blog and it has a recipe, but it also has a little
story, anecdote,
3 to 5 to 15 paragraph essay,
yeah,
about the thing they're going to do and what it means and the context of what they're doing in their life or whatever.
Why,
yeah, yeah, exactly. I read that whole thing. You know why? Because I want to know what you have to say about this thing that you're cooking or baking. Cookbooks are largely the same now. What you'll get is whoever's written the cookbook is going to give you a few paragraphs of, here's this recipe, here's why this recipe, here's what I think about this recipe, here's what it means to my life.
Right. Well, as with any other kind of writing, some people are better at it than others.
Yes. Now, if you're bored by the blogs because the writing isn't great, sure, skip to the recipe. But I like to read a cookbook. I especially love, and I've said this a million times, Nigella Lawson makes me so happy just to read her.
Yeah.
You know, she was a food writer first. Anyway, I found this recipe for a vanilla cake with a weird frosting that I'll talk about on Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make it, so I made it. And we went to the grocery store Saturday morning, so I had everything. I had everything that I needed. We were down to 1 stick of butter, and I made you get 2 pounds of butter
yes.
while you were there.
We're not hoarding it. We're going to use it.
Oh, no, no, no. Butter is, you know, it's an essential ingredient in so many things.
We're by the way,
yes.
You know, while the everything is terrible, except for the fact that, March was, the best month ever for our, Patreon. So I just want to give
Because everyone was like, oh no, they lost their jobs. We have to help them.
That, and we had time to
we're
fill.
We're very happy about, but, you know, yeah, that because it's,
certainly nobody had to. So we just, I just want to give a quick shout out to our new members, our upgrading members, our veteran members. All of you, thank you for subscribing. It means the world to us.
And I want to tell all of y'all who might have had to recently drop your Patreon subscription
because of the world being on hold.
That's good. It's fine.
We get it.
If you can't afford to support podcasts with Patreon right now, don't do it.
Yes.
Don't do it. We
food and rent and we'll other
figure
things
out
are more
we'll
important.
Figure out our own life.
Yes.
You take care of you.
Yes.
First. I've had a couple people contact me, email me and say, I lost my job. I have to leave Patreon. I'm very sorry. I just wanted to let you know. And I'm like, you don't have to apologize.
It's kind of you to let us know, but yeah we get it.
It's just, you know, it's no different than if you decided that you couldn't afford to go to the grocery store and buy, you know, whatever. You don't have to apologize to the grocery store. Yeah. Like,
I'm sorry, I'm buying the generic butter.
We provide content for people who want to pay us for it.
Yes.
We've created a thing. If you would like to buy it each month, we love that.
Sure.
We love to sell you our content each month. We love to have your subscription. We love to have, you know, you with us for the Linoleum Knife Club meeting. This month we're going to watch The Dirty Dozen, and I can't wait. If y'all ain't ever seen The Dirty Dozen, it's 2.5 hours of Nazi killing times. They kill them Nazis.
It will be my first time seeing it.
It is such a typical late 60s, like, macho, macho, dude, men, men, war. Like, even the poster that I posted, that I put on the Patreon, mm-hmm. is like, gather up the men. Excite them, and then like under the like each like thing has a picture. It's like gather the crew, and there's a picture of the dudes. Then it says excite them, and you see that they're like making out with women. I'm like, where'd you get the women from? Like, I don't even remember if that's part of the movie. Like, it might be. It's been a long time since I've seen it, and I don't remember like
the exciting part.
How when was the makeout scene in The Dirty Dozen? I just don't remember this. Oh, well. So I'll be interested to find out just how misogynist this whole sequence is. Because if it was, I completely forgot about it. And then it says, and then set them loose on the Nazis, and then they're like killing all the Nazis. A rousing 2.5 hours on what day did we do this? We're doing it on the 18th,
I believe so. Yeah.
Saturday, April 18th.
Yes.
Anyway, that's part of Patreon.
Patreon.com/linoleum.
If you can do it, you can do it. If you can't, you can't. We love you all equally.
This show is, always has been, and always will be free. So
yes.
You got this coming at you once a week, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And so even though the theaters are closed, there's still plenty to talk about.
And things that are new, things that are streaming. There are two new films this week. Well, no, there's more than two.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've already talked about the Disney Nature films.
Actually, I haven't. We wound up...
What?
We pushed it back a week after all that.
Well, lay it on us.
Sure.
I didn't watch these for reasons I'll explain in a moment.
Okay.
Tell us what they are.
So, for the last several years, come April, come Earth Day,
right.
Disney releases... They have a shingle called Disney Nature, where they release nature documentaries. And they're very specific kinds of nature documentaries in that... They're always narrated by somebody famous, and they are designed to be like baby's first nature documentary in a mm-hmm. lot of ways.
Yep.
Like, they create a narrative where they give the animals names, and they really lean into the whole family structure of
uh-huh.
mommy and daddy and the cousins and the whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And they tend to try their best to avoid some of the harsher realities. Obviously, that's kind of impossible. I'll never forget the screening of...
that just came into my head.
Was it Jungle Cats? Was it what it was called?
Something like that, yeah. Sam Jackson was an error.
Sam Jackson, yeah. Dude, they're precious cubs. and this little girl was there with her mom. And
flipping out.
Had to be removed from the theater twice before they finally realized, let's just not go back in, because...
Guess that cat's getting eaten. Guess that cat's getting eaten.
So, you know, they're really...
She had one good song.
Yes.
She had more than one good song, but, you know.
They're trying to strike a balance here. And look, on the one hand, I am all for easing kids into the idea of documentary, of nature documentary, of environmentalism, which I'm these not, movies
are... Show that on. Kid... Like some Frederick Wiseman 4-hour.
Oh yeah, great
show
idea.
Show that kid Belfast, yeah, Maine.
Public housing. That's gonna go over great.
Kid, this is a documentary. Get into it, because that's the family you were born into. Can you imagine if we had a child?
That kid would be like,
can we watch Satan Tango again?
No, we're gonna watch,
yes, we can. You're the best adopted kid ever.
We're going to watch these 70s Electric Company episodes. Anyway, yeah. So this year, I guess they made two of them. And I don't know if the idea was like one was going to be theatrical and one was going to go to Disney Plus, but they're both on Disney Plus.
They are.
Both dropped on Friday.
What are their names?
One of them is Elephants. Actually, let me double check that I have the actual title. I think it's just called Elephant or Elephants. And it is narrated by Meghan, Duchess of Sussex.
Ooh!
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 Yes. Elephant, rather.
One elephant?
Yes.
Oh, that's a lie, because there's a whole bunch of elephants in this movie.
Yes, but they wanted people to confuse it with the Gus Van Sant movie.
I walked back and forth through the... then they should have called it Elephants.
Yeah, I know.
If they didn't want to
I'm saying they did. I was kidding.
Oh, I see. There's a whole bunch of elephants in this movie.
A whole bunch.
Yeah.
So Elephant is about basically a year in the life of this, like, herd, pack, pride, whatever the collective is, of elephants, a murder, where they go from the wetlands, which then dry up, and then they have to kind of troop around and find
a group of elephants is called a bop.
Oh, thank you. The bop of elephants. Please. You know, and there's like the one little sort of scamp playful elephant who's our protagonist.
His name is Bonk Bonk.
Yeah. It's actually Jomo.
Sure.
Anyway, it's okay. The one cool thing about it is that they do not in any way sort of shy away from the fact that this is a matriarchal culture.
Yeah.
Like, all of the elephants who are making decisions are female, and the males just sort of skarker off somewhere, apparently, at a certain age, and the women just, like, run the show and take the kids around and, you know, scare off the lions that want to eat them and all that stuff.
A gang of lions will jump on an elephant and eat that elephant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some tense moments with that. And Duchess Meghan is okay at this. It's really hard to sort of slip too much into, like, cutesy, and she doesn't quite know how to pull back on it. So not the best of the narrators of these, but, like, not terrible. Yeah. She doesn't embarrass herself. The other one that came out on Friday...
Maybe she'll be better at duchessing than she was at acting.
Maybe. Look, I don't think she was a bad actress.
I have no idea if she was a bad actress. I've never seen anything that she was in.
I saw her Hallmark movie.
I saw 3 seconds of her Hallmark movie, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's what you used to do.
Yeah, and she was fine.
All right.
The other one is called Dolphin
Reef. Is she going to go back to acting now that she's here? Like, they're living here.
Yeah, no,
We're going to see them at, like, Bob's Coffee and Donuts one of these days.
Maybe, yeah. I think they're going to be like the Obamas, and they're going to, like, produce important documentaries and, you know, like, put their name on things that are, you know, that hew to their politics and sensibilities and, you know, whatever.
Right.
And she'll do gigs like this, you know, where she'll narrate something.
Right,
right. You know, like, her presence will be, you know, yeah, I don't, she is not, like, trying to get a job on the next Chicago whatever, you know.
Wouldn't that be funny?
And she Meghan, Duchess of Sussex, as Dispatch Gertie.
You know,
the wisecracking 9/11.
I'm going to tell you, they move back here, and she doesn't ever have to audition for anything.
Oh, yeah, no, she's offer
like,
only.
She's offer only
no
now.
No question.
Right? She's Luis Guzman. She can do whatever she wants, and they just call her on the phone and be like, would you like to do this? Bill Murray, call his answering machine. And then.
Exactly.
And they're like, hey, Hey, we want you to do a we need you on the Conners. And she's like, no.
Would you like
no,
to?
Thank you.
Would you like to present at this year's Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards?
And
we,
get and
we
get
promise
slimed.
Not to slime you.
You'll get slimed.
The other Disney Nature movie that dropped this week is Dolphin Reef, which is a which is the better of the two. It is narrated by Natalie Portman, and it is about a young scamp dolphin, but
named Pringly.
No, it's Echo, actually. There are no bunny men in this movie, however. The, you know, like the family dynamic stuff is very familiar to anybody who's seen these movies. But the movie really, the reef is as much a thing that the movie's about as the dolphins. So the whole ecosystem of what fish and other, you know, sort of the chain of predators that live on this thing, who eats the reef to keep it from overgrowing and thus like sucking up too much oxygen or whatever. Like it really, there's some interesting science here. I learned stuff I didn't know about undersea life. I saw some creatures I'd never seen before that were very cool.
I like that cuttlefish.
The cuttlefish that hypnotizes you
yeah,
is great.
It's like, trust in me.
There's like, there's a shrimp with these like club arms that will like crack on a crab that gets too close.
Underwater is like going to a terrifying other planet.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, as Jacques Cousteau called, you know, le monde sans soleil.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'll say this. Consistently in the Disney Nature films, and certainly with these two, like, they're shot beautifully. They are shot, like, you're like, how did they get that? How did they get that close? What did they what did they bring into the editing room to even, like, create a story in all of this? And then, like, I was telling Dave, like, the closing credits of these movies are, it's like the what's the company that makes,
The Burt Reynolds films.
No. The animation studio, Leica.
Leica,
the
yeah.
closing credits are always the best part because they show you how it all happened, you know? And, yeah, I mean, it's just amazing, this underwater photography and, like, how what the stuff they're able to get. Because there's everything from, like I said, little tiny shrimp who are, like, defending their little patch of the world to humpback whales. Like, this movie has it all. So, yeah, if you're going to watch only one of them, check out Dolphin Reef. But they're both worth a look if you like this sort of thing and you know what you're in for with a Disney Nature movie.
I'm just going to tell you right now what my DVD / streaming pick of the week is.
What's that?
Because I do this now annually when the Disney Nature films come.
Uh-huh.
The Criterion Collection's Science is Fiction, the films of Jean Panlevé.
Okay.
If you don't know who I'm talking about, please go to YouTube and type in Jean, J-E-A-N, Panlevé, Pain, L-E-V-E. P-A-I-N, L-E-V-E. The trippiest, old-fashioned, black-and-white, underwater cinematography. Dude was like Cousteau before Cousteau.
Huh.
And I talk about this. I may have recommended this more times than any other thing I've ever recommended. But it is a trip, and you need to see it. So give yourself a little taste on YouTube. But Criterion Collection has a beautiful DVD
that you bought
me for Christmas, yeah. But that at one point we had, because when it was released, they sent us a copy.
Hmm.
And then I don't know what happened to it. Like, I lent it to somebody or something, yeah. I don't know. And
that vortex.
Then it was gone. And so, what was I going to say? Anyway, that's it. Do it. I mentioned this as my regular announcement to go enjoy Jean Panlevé.
Okay, fine.
Oh, and you will enjoy it. It's freaky deaky. I can't deal with these Disney Nature films. I used to think they were fine,
mm-hmm.
but the formula is so grating to me.
I think, you know, it's funny. I mean, I seem to recall
that I just gave up.
I think when I reviewed the Jungle Cats one,
right.
I said something along the lines of, like, the narration is what makes this irritating. If you like put in earbuds and listen to like Ladysmith Black Mambazo for 90 minutes while looking at it, that would be great. So like, I kind of think the same thing applies with this. Like, if you want to just turn down the volume and not listen to what the Duchess and Natalie Portman have to say and just look at these images and listen to something beautiful.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They're beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
You want to see these animals do their thing. But like hearing the, you know,
uh-oh. Yeah, that kind of thing.
And just the whole thing, like, mommy and daddy love their little baby. I'm like, no, they don't.
Yeah, they would eat that kid if
they were hungry enough. Yeah. So, like...
Yeah, the anthropomorphizing gets a little thick. But, look, you're at home. Turn the volume down and crank up something on your stereo or listen to something in your earbuds and just watch them. Just look at them and make up your own storyline. What the heck?
That's what you should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big release of the week, streaming-wise, is a movie that we missed in theaters because the press screening... I didn't go to Sundance this year. The press screening happened while you were still getting over being sick, and it was already feeling weird leaving the house before like things really started cracking down. So we only just now saw... Eliza Hittman's Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always.
Because it just became available this weekend.
Yes.
Yes.
It just became available on Friday.
How long was it in theaters before the theaters all shut down? Like a week.
Like a week, maybe. A week or two tops. Yeah.
Right.
Depending on where you were. You know, and it's too bad because, like, you know, it was the kind of thing where they opened it on four screens in New York and LA. And under normal circumstances, it would have had a nice, big, hefty per screen average opening weekend and then made its way across the country because all the reviews out of Sundance were glowing and people were really loving this movie. But because of things being as they are, it just, the theatrical didn't happen. But now it is, you know, Universal a few weeks ago made The Hunt and Invisible Man and Emma available. This is a Focus film, which is a division of Universal. Which means they're also doing the 1999 rental, which is, you know, the thing they're doing, which only Universal is doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because like for Bloodshot or The Way Back, like a lot of these other recent movies that they've made streaming early,
right.
It's like it's $20, but you're buying the movie.
Right.
So, like, you at least have it in your digital library until that just disappears one day.
Right.
But these are 48-hour rentals for $20, which is pretty steep.
If you're home alone, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Unless you live in Los Angeles and go to the Arclight and the Grove a lot, because that's how much tickets cost.
This is true.
There,
and
anyway.
Like, you know, Trolls World Tour, I'm sure, will be a bargain for families because,
right,
you
right.
know... Between buying tickets for mom and dad and whoever and the kids and then like the snacks
mom
and whatever.
And dad never both go at the same time.
I suppose not. Whoever loses the coin toss.
The short straw is it's Saturday. Guess what one of us is about to do?
It's your turn.
And the one who doesn't do this is staying home to fold the laundry.
Or have a nice nap.
No.
Maybe not.
Clean something.
Anyway.
Do something.
So that we'll be talking about that next week. But So Never, Early, Sometimes, Always is now rentable, and you can now get it, and you should. Because it's great.
It is the story of a young teenage woman named Autumn, played by brand new first-time film actor Sydney Flanagan.
Yes.
She is in high school. She is a musician. She is living in a working class neighborhood in Pennsylvania, I guess outside of Philadelphia somewhere or outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it was like something county. Like it's out in the sticks.
It's she is not a particularly happy young woman. Her family life is not great. Her stepfather is a jerk, and her mom is sort of like focused on the little kids and tending to the stepfather.
Yeah, presumably the kids she had with the stepfather.
I assume,
perhaps,
yes. Anyway, very little is explained; it's all shown.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot in this movie that is implicit and upon you to sort of connect your own dots.
Yeah. So Autumn. Works in a little grocery store with her cousin, Skylar.
Mm-hmm.
And Autumn discovers that she is pregnant. Unfortunately, she makes the very easy and common mistake of being duped by
A
a
quote-unquote women's
that
clinic.
is not a women's clinic at all. They are an anti-choice setup.
Yeah.
They'll do the pregnancy test for you with a little over-the-counter,
Stick.
grocery store test, and then they show you a video about how you must keep your baby.
And they will lie to you about how far along you are so that if you do decide to try and talk to Planned Parenthood or somebody
You
else,
might be too late,
yeah.
depending on where you live, and so they've got it all mapped out to wreck your ability to choose.
Yeah.
She then decides that she is going to go have an abortion. She's going to have to go to New York because if she stays in Pennsylvania,
She has to have parental
she has
consent
to have parental consent.
as a minor.
And therefore, she and Skylar get on the bus and they go to New York City. I'm not going to talk about what happens after that.
Yeah.
But it is, in terms of filmmaking style, Eliza Hittman, she made Beach Rats.
Yes, and a lot like Love.
I have not seen A Lot Like Love.
Nor have I. I want to,
I
though.
saw Beach Rats, was not a huge fan
Oh, I was.
of it, primarily because I felt like the filmmaking choices were a pretty typical indie film sort of collection of decisions, both in look and tone and, occasional inexplicability. Not like, why did you do that? But why are these people doing this thing right now? And why isn't anyone talking about a something that might give them another choice, in this scenario? I'm talking about characters here. I still feel, in general, like the filmmaking here is a lot of stuff I've seen before, by filmmakers that I like more.
Well, I was reminded of Cleo from 5 to 7 quite a bit.
Yes.
I wanted to ask
I was thinking
you.
about Agnès Varda. I was thinking about the Dardennes. I was thinking about other people in film history who have paved the way for this kind of movie to happen.
Right.
So I'm still not super on board with, not with, okay, let me start that sentence over.
Okay.
Obviously, this type of filmmaking is something that I like. I'm not feeling a directorial presence.
Really?
Yeah. And so that's not, and that might be on me.
I see, 'cause I feel like her stuff is so vision, not visionary in the sense of, like new and different, but like it does represent a vision.
Maybe I'm not quite yet convinced of that.
Okay.
I think this is a better film than Beach Rats.
Okay.
This is a more, I believe, accomplished film than Beach Rats. I get more of a sense of who these two young women are than I got from the kid in Beach Rats. What's that actor's
Harris
name?
Dickinson.
Okay. But I wanted to get that out of the way before I praise it, because I do want to say, here's my little.
Now that I've crapped all
No, no,
over it, let me give
no.
you a golf
No, no,
clap.
no. Let's put this in perspective
Okay.
here. I'm not here to crap on this movie at all. I just wanted to get my
Reservations.
reservation out of the way
Okay.
before I tell you that this is a very good film. It is a story that is so infrequently told that, and such a common story in the world,
Sure.
particularly now when abortion rights are under furious attack, and the legalities surrounding abortion are being like rolled back inch by inch by inch by inch by inch until you find yourself needing one, and then you're screwed. And so
we have a de facto overturn of Roe v. Wade in a lot of areas and for a lot of, and again, as always, it's if you're poor, you're much more screwed than if you're not.
And this girl is poor. Yeah. And so this is a timely, relevant story that is told in a subtle, quiet, yet also harrowing manner. It's an extremely stressful film. I was upset.
Yeah.
While watching it.
And what's harrowing isn't the abortion itself.
No, because that's not seen. It's not shown. This is not 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days.
No. I was going to say that very thing. But it is. It's just about the hoops that keep getting put in their way. The hurdles they have to overcome to do this thing that they supposedly have a legal right to do.
It's not just hoops or hurdles. It's like an agonizing set of roadblocks. Yeah. That are designed
to dissuade you from doing it at all.
To crush you under the stress of all the things that you must accomplish if you're gonna leave the state to go somewhere and get this done. It doesn't even matter what you think about the goodness or badness of being able to choose to have an abortion or not. This is about the punitive nature of what's going on in the United States right now.
Yeah.
Young women, all women, are under attack.
Yes.
By these restrictions and laws. And so I'm really happy that this film exists, although it's not fun to watch.
No.
Very good film. And the performances are really something from these two young women.
Talia Ryder plays the cousin.
Talia Ryder has been in a few more things, and she's fixing to be in West Side Story.
Yeah, she's going to be one of the Jets.
Yeah.
So I was curious because, as you were saying, this is Sydney Flanagan's first film, and she's extraordinary. She has, there is an uninterrupted take of her in close-up answering a questionnaire, the one that gives the film its title.
Right.
That is devastating.
Yeah.
That is A level movie acting.
Yeah.
And it's her first film. And Harris Dickinson, I believe, if Beach Rats was his first or among his first films. And so I'm curious, because you've seen a lot more of his work than I have, how does Hitman's use of non-prose compare to your beloved Robert Bresson, Bobby B. use of non-professional actors?
Well, Bresson didn't even call them actors. He referred to them as models.
Models, right.
And sometimes they would be a one and done. Sometimes they would go on to have actual acting careers. Mm-hmm. And so his process is clearly much different than Eliza Hittman's.
I mean, because his goal is to get as little emotion out of them as possible.
Yeah,
right?
he would strip them down to the bare essentials and would be upset if they were even trying to give a theatrical performance.
Gotcha.
and he wouldn't allow it. It just was, when people are speaking in a Bresson film, it's this very sort of I'm reading words. Mm. And there's a whole reason for that. I'm not going to go into it now, but, pure cinema. Let's get it. Let's just say what it was.
Sure.
Here, the use of a first-time actor is, I think, simply she found the right person. Mm. I don't think it was. Obviously, it wasn't a manifesto choice, because if it had been, then other people in this film
would also be unknowns.
Yes.
Because the maybe the most recognizable face in the film for me was Theodore Pellerin, who was on Becoming a God in Central Florida this year with Kirsten Dunst. He plays the guy they meet on the bus, who, pretty much all the men in this movie are terrible.
Of all the men in this movie, he's the best one.
Like the scene that I mentioned where she is answering the questions, I won't get into the details of it, but clearly there is like there have been painful incidents in her past.
Yes.
And while the movie never tells you at whose hand they occurred, she does all of the men in her life, whether they're classmates or the stepdad or the boss at work, like are all capable of having done something terrible.
They're all suspects.
Yeah.
Yes. And so this is a very good film. I recommend it. However, it's a tough time we're living in right now.
Yeah, if you're not in the mood.
If you're not in the mood for this kind of thing, it should come with a content warning.
Yeah.
There are some very upsetting revelations that take place in the film. I kind of had like my heart in my mouth the whole time I was watching it. And when it was over, I thought, I'm glad I watched that. I'm glad it's over.
It was like watching Take Me to the River with You.
A little bit, yeah. Mm. It was very kind of what's going to happen?
Yeah.
No. Like,
look, What's Up Doc is on the Criterion Channel. Yes. Do yourself a favor. We could use a little lightness right now.
When you're ready.
Yes. It'll
never
be there.
Never, rarely, sometimes, always is a film that you should see.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A movie you need to get on to quickly, because it is going to be available online for a limited time.
Not just a limited time, 1 week. I don't know why just 1 week, but 1 week.
Yes.
And it's free.
Yes.
But it's up for 1 week.
Yes.
Now, you've heard me in the past go to bat for Strobe and Huye.
Uh-huh.
Former husband and wife director team. She has passed away. Jean-Marie Strobe, however, is still alive and with us. He's in his like 80s, maybe even 90 by now. Still making films. Now, his last feature was from 2014, but since then he's been making lots of shorts, and that's standard operating procedure for him/them. Like, they began their film careers making shorts. And for them, a short film and a narrative length feature are all the same thing. They present a short to you in the same way that they present a feature to you. Like, here's our new film.
Right.
We expect you to watch it.
Here is the new work.
Yeah. This one is called France Against the Robots. It is 9 minutes and 53 seconds long. They make a very specific point of that in all the things I've been reading. Like, here's the new Jean-Marie Strobe film, 2020, France Against the Robots.
Yes.
Would you like to explain what you saw? Or would you like me to explain what we saw?
Sure, why not? All right. A gentleman named Christophe Claver, who is best known as a cinematographer and also an editor, is walking around a lake. In, I guess, what is presumably in France.
Lake Geneva, apparently.
Oh, is it?
That's what I hear.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I did a little read-up after about...
He is reading from a work by Georges Bernanos, who is best known for the novel Diary of a Country Priest, which was later turned into a film by Robert Bresson.
In 1947, Bernanos published France Against the Robots.
Yes.
Like a long essay.
Yeah.
About revolution and the future and what we have to fear and what we have to look forward to. And
let's just say it all still completely applies.
Yes.
75 whatever years later. He's talking about how, you know, the idea of the system evolving has stopped, that now it's just a question of surviving and what it does to maintain itself and to allow rich people to maintain their power based on the use of wealth and race and nation to, like, make people afraid.
And specifically, he mentions technology.
Yes.
Even though in 1947, the understanding of technology radically different than
I assume they were thinking more about like bombs.
Yeah. So structurally, what's fascinating about this is that it happens, this little monologue, mm-hmm, directly taken from Bernanos' essay, is presented twice.
Yes. You get the credits again, and you're like, bah-bah-bah.
It's presented twice in a row, nearly identically, but at different times of day.
Yes, and with slight change in the dialogue, or the monologue, rather.
And so it's kind of like Monet painting the water lilies at different times of day. And so what you get in this little short, you know, little short chunk mm-hmm. of very, very, very typical Jean-Marie Strobe.
And it's an uninterrupted take.
Stuff is, yeah, is an exceptionally dry, distanced observation of the hideousness of history, how it must be discarded, and whether or not the future is even worth trying for anyway. Not overly optimistic, but not hopeless either.
No. Anybody who's been tweeting about guillotines recently should
watch it. Oh, yeah, for sure. I love these two. Like, the spirit of Daniel Houillet hovers over this little 9-minute, 53-second.
And this movie is dedicated, is it to
Godard? It's dedicated to Jean-Luc Godard, who was also a big fan of this Bernanos essay. Bernanos was a problem, but not always. The thing, you know, he was extremely conservative, but also capable of being right sometimes. And so,
I pulled up his IMDb page, and he immediately is described as a Roman Catholic with monarchist leanings.
Oh, yeah.
He was critical of elitist thought and was opposed to what he identified as defeatism.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting dude of the early part of the 20th century in France.
He also wrote Under the Son of Satan, which was sure turned did. Into a film by
Maurice Pialat.
Maurice Pialat, right. Yep.
Anyway, check it out. It's free. It's 10 minutes. 10 minutes of your life.
It's on a website called
Kino Slang.
KINOSLANG.
.blogspot.com.
Oh, and he wrote Mouchette, too.
Indeed, he did.
And he wrote a film based on the dialogue of the Carmelites, and which was adapted into the opera.
Yes.
I just keep tripping over this guy. What is the deal?
Well, you know, I brought him into your life.
I guess so. It's like, you know, you learn a word and then you keep hearing it everywhere.
Right. Yeah. And that's why you're so happy to be married to me.
It's the cakes, really.
Everything about me is cake. How about that? What do you let's think about it like that, shall we?
All the world is birthday cake, but take a piece. Take a piece, but not too much.
Or take a big piece. Hey, guys. A few weeks ago, we talked about HIMAT is a space in time. A 3.5-hour documentary about 3-hour and 40-minute documentary.
Oh, please.
About one man's family history of the 20th century in Germany, Thomas Heise, well-known documentary filmmaker. They had it in a theatrical release in a very limited way in New York and Los Angeles. Then the theaters closed. Now you can stream it.
In a specific place or anywhere?
It benefits the Anthology Film Archives.
Oh, nice.
And so we'll post that link and I'll send this to you.
I blanked on whatever I was going to say. Anyway, the other thing that we watched this week is the beautiful Criterion Blu-ray of Paris is Burning, which comes loaded with tons of outtakes.
Yeah.
And I knew that there was a lot of material floating around because director Jenny Livingston donated some like 20 hours or something of footage to the Outfest UCLA Legacy Project, which is the world's largest preservation and restoration program dedicated to LGBTQ cinema, and they have restored movies where there were like no good release prints left. They have saved, you know, vintage like 1950s lesbian bar home movie footage kind of stuff, like all kinds of things, and different, you know, short films and features and documentaries. And so I guess part of this gift was that they were able to get access to these outtakes and include them on the Blu-ray. And it's fascinating because I think, you know, you look at Paris is Burning and it's clearly a film that is, you know, it is not slick. Like they were shooting it in these clubs, in these apartments, however they were lit, you know, on the piers.
Yep.
And so even then there's a, you know, I hate to throw around the term verite, because for me that means like you can see the boom mic. But you know, it has a very kind of, you know, realistic sense about it. And then you look at these outtakes and you're like, wow, these didn't really go through post. These are really raw.
Yeah, they really are. But I love all the extra information we're getting. Dorian out of drag.
Yes. When
Dorian laying down queer history of the 20th century.
Yeah. When Dorian first appears out of drag, I was like, I gasped. I had never seen such a thing. It's, you know,
extra heartbreaking stuff Paris is Burning is simultaneously a really fun movie to watch and a really just devastating movie to watch because since 1990, most of the folks in the film have died.
Yes.
And Venus Extravaganza,
during
the shoot of the film, Venus Extravaganza just most horrifically was murdered.
Yes.
And that's, that can never, like, I remember watching that movie for the first time at the Inwood Theater in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. And that moment being like, no, like just, it just cuts you in the gut.
Because she's such a light, you know.
And she wants so much out of life.
Yes. And she has dreams and goals.
Not going to get it.
Watching those footages that I'd never seen before of Venus reminded me of when Heath Ledger died.
Yeah.
Because I had interviewed him at the Toronto Film Festival when Brokeback Mountain came out.
Right.
And he and Michelle Williams had just had their baby.
Yeah.
And he was so excited about fatherhood and about, like, domesticity and just, like, he had these specific concrete things that he was excited about and looking forward to. And to see that snuffed out is so sad. And it's the same with Venus, where she very much like has this life that she wants to lead and she's going to get it for herself and she knows how she's going to accomplish it. And, you know, it just, it's all taken away. Pepper LaBeija has a lot of great stuff. And again, I get why this isn't in the movie. You know, like films have a rhythm and you can never use all the stuff that you get. And you know, I like, there's nothing here where I was like, oh, how could they have left it out? Like, I get it that you pace films a certain way and you throw in 5 more minutes of somebody talking and it throws off the whole thing. But it's great to now have this as a resource to see it, because these people are so fascinating and have, they're all performers. And so I think, you know, when you do a documentary about performers, like the camera is on them and they know the camera is on them.
Right.
And it doesn't, and they can still be honest.
Pepper LaBeija especially knows the camera is on him.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think that keeps them from being honest or being like, you know, really disclosing a lot of stuff. But at the same time, like, they are putting on a show.
It's a great film in the version that you get to see before now.
Absolutely. All,
Short, 76-minute long film. Yeah. I never realized how short it was because it feels like such a complete thing.
Absolutely.
But now all this extra stuff is just thrilling.
Yeah. So if you, you know, if you've never seen Paris is Burning, good heavens, what are you waiting for? But also, you know, like if say you've been watching Pose, you know, or Kiki or other...
If you've been watching Pose, so much of this will feel familiar to you because so many things that happen in Paris is Burning have been transposed, no pun intended, into storylines on Pose. The death of Candy, the problem of
Electra
John. Abundance's secret, which, to be fair, in Paris is Burning, you don't learn about Dorian's secret.
Yeah, we didn't know until
Nobody knew about Dorian's secret until after Dorian died.
Yeah.
But Dorian had quite a a wild secret. Yes.
But yeah. But I think the Pose episode really gives you a level of empathy towards what must
absolutely,
have happened.
Yeah.
That maybe the lurid details don't provide.
No, the lurid details at the time were just lurid details, yeah. And no one was talking about
the context.
Well, this is what happens sometimes, yeah. To, you know, marginalized folks who are living precarious lives
and not going to get a fair shake from the justice system.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know.
And Jenny Livingston, we should note, is now working on Pose. She actually directed episodes in season two and is like in the writer's room and stuff. So anyway, yeah, Criterion Paris is Burning. It's super worth it. You know, I always lament the death of the DVD extra just about these days. But, you know, Criterion, Scream Factory, and Arrow Video are totally keeping that alive. And I super appreciate it. And a lot of this stuff, I don't know about the Paris is Burning stuff, but a lot of the Criterion extras you can watch on the Criterion channel. Like, you can choose to watch the director commentary track of a movie,
right.
And that kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, rain's coming down again.
I have a DVD pick real quick.
Yeah.
Beach Rats.
Sure.
Which I totally disagree with you. I think that, again, I haven't seen Hitman's first film, but based on the two features I have seen, I think she has a great sense of young people's lives and the moments that are life or death, end of the world for them. You know, that, and that's not in a condescending way. Like, these are big, huge shifts that they have to cope with and deal with.
Right.
And I think that she's very good at letting you in on their world while allowing them to be inarticulate, which is a challenge. Like, the people in her movies talk like 17-year-olds talk.
Right.
You know, and at the same time, you still get that glimpse and that insight into what they're about and what makes them tick and what they want and what they fear and all that stuff. I can't believe that you're talking about how it doesn't, like, it's so incredibly shot, that movie. The Beach Rats is gorgeously put together. You know, the way that she uses, that she approximates the male gaze in this film, the gay male gaze, rather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think is spot on. Dickinson's performance is great. I think it's a wonderful
I did film. Not dislike all of Beach Rats.
Okay.
There was just, I felt, you know, conflicted coming out of it.
Fair enough.
But, you know, there are elements of Beach Rats that are quite moving. Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always is very moving.
I will say Never, Always, NRSA is a better film.
Yeah.
But I like Beach Rats a lot.
NRSA, like a MRSA, but with an N.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's how you can remember the title of this film.
Yes, it's a lot to take in. We have a letter.
A letter from Joshua.
Yes.
Good day, gentlemen. I hope both of you are well while the world is on fire. I have a list, and I would be honored if the two of you would be kind enough to knife it for me.
Okay.
We shall. Number one, Persona.
Still never seen it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I need
to. Then you,
it's on the Criterion, gentlemen.
Joshua, you get the benefit of the doubt on
yes,
Persona.
Yes, we'll give you that one. I hear it's great. I want to see it. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Manhattan.
Oh.
How are we? Oh. Let's talk about this for just a second.
Yeah.
Before we knew anything,
yes.
What did we think about Manhattan?
Oh, for a long time, Manhattan was one of my very favorite films ever.
That's
like,
right.
I saw that movie That's when right. I was 16 years old, and it blew my mind.
The height of sophistication.
Oh, yeah. So very sophisticated.
Yeah.
And the I'd never seen a black and white CinemaScope film before.
Right.
Like, just so much of it I thought was just so great. I cannot watch it now.
It's tough to watch it now.
I cannot watch it now. Because he had an actual 17-year-old girlfriend while making that movie. Like,
right.
The Mario Hemingway character is based on someone. And apparently in his memoir, Woody talks about how he hooked up with Mario Hemingway at the time when she was a minor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I have not read the book. There's reportage that I have read.
Huh.
I can't with Manhattan anymore.
Right.
But
is it still a great film?
I don't know. Maybe after Woody dies, I can watch it again and not have to think about that.
Right.
But at the moment, I can't deal with it. Let's give him half for that one.
Let's give it all to him.
Okay. All right.
Because our reservations
didn't
keep it off this list.
Yeah.
And so I get it. Like, if you are really into this film,
I understand that what that's about. I certainly was for a long time.
Number three, Vivre sa vie.
Oh, yes.
My favorite Godard.
Not my favorite, but...
My favorite.
But, yeah, that's a good one.
As I was moving ahead, occasionally, I saw brief glimpses of beauty.
Never seen it, although it sounds like it would be a good, very long double feature with Haymat as a space and time.
An all-day double feature.
It's a five-hour documentary where Jonas Mekas goes through his old home movies.
Yeah. It was from the year 2000. Yeah. I have not seen it. But if there's a way to find it and stream it, you know, you should try. Mm-hmm. I have seen some early Jonas Mekas stuff from the 60s, and, you know, he was fantastic. And so...
We'll give you that one.
Absolutely on board to watch this. You're getting the benefit of the doubt because neither one of us have seen this yet.
Yeah.
Number five, Eraserhead.
Oh, sure.
Taxi Driver.
Yeah, I don't love Taxi Driver the way a lot of people do, but I get why they love it.
A Hard Day's Night.
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm.
Last Year at Marienbad.
Baroque.
Lugubre.
Yes.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Your list is 100% knife.
With an asterisk.
With an asterisk. Because we are so conflicted about
Manhattan.
Manhattan. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the program.
We're done.
Once again, a quick reminder, we are at patreon.com/linoleumknife if you want our extra digital content like Linoleum Knife and Fork and LKTV and Linoleum Knights, as well as shirts and Christmas ornaments and other fun stuff. Check
that
out.
That require going to the post office to ship, and I don't know what to do about going to the post office. And
it might be a minute. Please be patient. Check out our friends on the internet. Go listen to my other shows, Breakfast All Day and Who Shot Ya. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Deck the Hallmark, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a 5-star review. It does help people find the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, including Google Play and Spotify and CastBox and Podbean. Our wonderful theme music is by Blue, and he just dropped a new single that I posted on the LK Facebook page. You can follow that and Twitter and Instagram, all at LinoleumCast. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, these are, we're in a crazy moment, but we're happy that you're spending it with us. And we hope that you're all taking care of yourselves and taking care of each other. Big shout out, thanks, props, air kisses to the medical personnel, to the grocery store workers, to the delivery people, to the mail carriers, to everybody who's out there, you know, keeping civilization functioning as such as it is, while the rest of us get to hide in our apartments. We super appreciate it, and we hope when this is over, you all strike for lots more money. Until next time.
Goodbye.